Abby's going to come read for us now. If you want to find Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 to 24. Matthew 6, 19 to 24.
Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and vermin destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money.
You adulterous people, don't you know that friendship with the world means enmity against God? Therefore, anyone who chooses to be a friend of the world becomes an enemy of God. James chapter 4, verse 4. Do not love the world or anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, love for the Father is not in them. For everything in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, comes not from the Father, but from the world. The world and its desires pass away, but whoever does the will of God lives forever. 1 John 2, 15 to 17. That love of the world is what Jesus addresses in the first part of this second half of the chapter, if that makes sense. So I guess the third part of the chapter in reality. And worry then in relation to the world is what he covers after that in verses 25 to 34 that Matthew will look at with us next week. Now, but what you've got to remember is that when we talk about the world, when James talked about the world, when John talked about the world there, he's not simply talking about the material stuff. So he's not just talking about trees and houses and birds and he's not simply talking about physical things. He's talking more fully about a view, a mindset, a mentality that the world has. The Bible tells us we've got three main enemies as Christians. We have the world, the flesh, and the devil. When it talks about the world, it's not talking about the good stuff God made. It's not our enemy in that sense. It is the world's ideas, the world's mindset, the world's mentality, what the world lives for. And here, the world is in focus in these words. Even if Jesus doesn't speak of it in using that word in that term, that's the idea that is challenged. Because in and of itself, the material world around us is good, isn't it? God made the world good. Yes, it's fallen and broken by sin, but God made a good world. But the outlook, the mentality, the worldview, the values of the world are dangerous. Because ultimately, they oppose God. They either oppose him by excluding him and working on the basis that he doesn't exist, and therefore building a framework for life with no reference to God, or they just flat out rage against God. He can be there, but they hate him. So actually everything will be done in opposition to him directly. And so when we come to these verses, probably quite familiar to many of us, if they're not familiar to it, it doesn't matter. If they are familiar to us, we've got to make sure that as we read them, we don't then go, oh, well, I already know what this means. I have half an hour sleep because it's warm and I'm tired and I know what these verses mean. Do not store up treasure in heaven, etc. As we come to these verses, we've got to ask questions like this. Do I love the world? Again, not the created order. You might say, of course I do. I love stars, I love fish, I love birds, I love whatever. Great. Now, do I love the world? Do I love what the world loves? What the world values? Rephrase it. What do I live for? It's a question Jesus is asking here. Effectively, what do I live for? What is my life about? Put it another way, what controls me? What is it that molds and shapes the decisions that I make day by day? What's the underlying driving factor in those things? Or to put it directly in Jesus' own words from the end of this little section, who is your master? Who is your master? See, the answers to those questions are linked. What do I live for? Who controls me? What controls me? Who's my master? Do I love the world? They're tied together. And how we answer those questions are absolutely crucial. Absolutely crucial. And so we're going to look at these few verses, 19 to 24, in three parts. Part one, verses 19 to 21, we are given a clear instruction that has a clear contrast. Two things we can do, and we can only do one or the other, Jesus says. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, he says, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Now, Jesus could have written it like that and skipped a little bit about moths and vermin, right? We'll come to why he puts that in a minute. But the instruction is, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. That's the contrast in the instruction Jesus gives. So the first thing we've got to ask is, what does he mean by treasure? Now, what's the first thing that comes to mind when you think treasure? For me, it's pirates and a chest that they open up and it's full of gold coins and, you know, rings and emeralds and all. That's it, treasure. It's a treasure chest. That's the first word that comes to my mind. It might not be yours, it might be Treasure Island, but similarly, that's pirates and treasure. So, you know, we're probably on the same wavelength. What does Jesus mean by treasure? He's not thinking about chests filled with gold that pirates search for. And that's not purely what he's talking about. He's not simply thinking about money and possessions. He is going much broader and much deeper and much further than just those things. Treasures might involve those things. But what Jesus says when he talks about treasure is something bigger and deeper than that. He's talking about, what do we value? What is it that satisfies us? What is the thing or things that we live for? Now, the reason I say it's not just simply money and possessions Jesus has got in his kind of laser target in these words is because we know that the world doesn't just value money and stuff. It does value money and stuff, but it doesn't only value those things. Think about it. We are bombarded, aren't we, by advertising for beauty products. Why? Because one of the things the world values is what you look like externally. Because the world says it matters for how popular you are, what you look like on the outside. It matters for how old people think you are. We had a discussion with our kids because my cousin came down to see us the other day and they were trying to guess how old he was. And he's 35, but one of them said 26 and one said 22. So he was loving it. He was like, this is great. I've already got like 13 years off my age. Brilliant. The world says what you look like matters for how old people think you are. It matters for how attractive you are to any potential partner. Think about the trends that go around. Trends for plastic surgery, trends for Botox, for hair dyeing, for whatever it might be at any given time, or all of those things together. The world says what you look like externally, well, that's essential to all those things. So get it right. The world says fame and reputation and status matter. They sell that to us. The job title, get a good one, you're sorted. The promotion, you've moved up the rung to the next level. The bio on your Instagram, that matters. So, you know, get some of these things, get a job, get a promotion, get a whatever it is, then you can put it on there and have a look, oh yeah, she's got this, he's got that. The world says it matters the number of likes and comments you get on social media, the number of followers you've got. What people do or don't think about you, that matters. Jesus said, look, don't store these up as your treasure. Don't store up for yourself a big bank balance. Don't store up a home standard house. Don't store up for yourself a list of letters after your name. Don't store up for yourself a record of the number of shares and retweets and likes you've got. Don't store up for yourself a list of the kind, nice things people have said about you. Don't let those things define you, Jesus says. Don't let those things be what you live for. Because they all end with this life. They all end with this life. They're all temporary. Doesn't mean you can't have beauty products. It doesn't mean you can't have a fancy job title. Doesn't mean you can't have letters after your name. But chasing them is a waste of time. Chasing them is a waste of time because they will not and cannot fulfill you the way you want them to. They just don't do that. They can't do that. You'll always need more. If your contentment is not in Jesus, then everything else will fail to do the thing you want it to do because only Jesus can do that. He's also not saying if you've got any of those things, you've got to get rid of them all. He's not saying, oh, well, you're really pretty and popular, make yourself ugly. That's not what he's getting at, right? He's not saying if you've got money, you know, flush it all down the toilet. You'd be better off. What he's saying is, don't store up for yourself treasures on earth. In other words, if you've got these things, if you've got that money, if you've got that status, if you've got that reputation, use it for the benefit of other people. Don't store it up for yourself. Don't make it the thing you live for. Be generous with it. Realize that any one or all of those things is a good gift from God that you can enjoy now and bless others with now, but it all might be gone tomorrow. You don't know what you're going to wake up to tomorrow, do you? None of us does. And that's why Jesus puts that gracious reasoning in between the opposite instructions. Why not store up for yourselves treasures on earth? Jesus says, well, because moth and vermin destroy them. Thieves break in and steal them. He's basically saying everything that is bound to this earth is vulnerable in one way or another. See, at the time, the people listening, this would have been dead obvious to them. Because the best thing they could do with anything valuable that they owned was probably bury it in the corner of their house. Or dig a hole in their wall, put it in, fill it over, and maybe put something that was a bit strong and protective over the top of it. That was the best thing they could do with something valuable. But it had only taken one person with some kind of sharp tool to dig through their wall and pull it out, and it was gone. They wouldn't even have to necessarily enter the house to get it. They could probably dig through from the outside. And there's no such thing as new for old insurance when Jesus was writing this. You know, when you get insurance, I don't know whether you've got this on your house insurance policy. Apparently it's on mine. If stuff gets nicked, it's new for old. We didn't have anything like that then. If it got nicked, it was nicked. It was gone. No new for old insurance. The same with their money. There were no banks, no cryptocurrencies, no fraud guarantees. If it was stolen, it was gone. Forever. Finished. Done. We live in a world of insurance. We might have insurance for some things today, but theft is still an issue, isn't it? Jesus' words aren't now out of date because we've got password-protected accounts and biometric passports. Your identity can be stolen. When Nancy and I got married, we tried to get a bank account together. The bank wouldn't give us it. We had no idea why until they then told us, oh, it's because your identity's been stolen. You've got a bunch of credit store cards in your name. This is for Nancy, which had never been paid off. We had no idea. Plus, stealing isn't just a thing that affects money and possessions either, is it? Disease can steal away our health. The company we work for goes bust, reputation is gone, stolen away. An affair can steal away a relationship and a happy family. Some of you have had COVID, and I'm not making light of this. Some of you lost your sense of smell and taste, right? It was stolen away. It meant your favourite meal, that lamb cooking on a Sunday, didn't smell very nice anymore. That steak that you wanted to eat, wasted time, it's like cardboard. That bacon butty, that salted caramel cheesecake, they just didn't hold the same appeal anymore, did they? Because the sense of smell was gone, the sense of taste had gone. Why? Because the disease had stolen it away. Everything earthly is vulnerable, Jesus says. Everything earthly, absolutely everything. So he's saying, enjoy it, yes. Treasure it, no. Remember Ecclesiastes? When we looked at that, everything is what? Vapor. Puff of smoke. Life as a whole. Puff of smoke. It's gone. Remember what I said about people vaping? You know, wander down the street, this massive puff of vapor comes out. Some of it smells lovely, to be fair. But if I tried to grab it, pocket it, and smell it again when I got home, it ain't going to be there, is it? I look like an idiot trying to grab all the smoke in the street. Jesus is saying, you try to grab hold of, you try to treasure up for yourselves things on earth, it's the same level of foolishness because it's gone. It can be stolen. It can rot. It can all be taken away. You cannot keep it, Jesus says. So don't treasure it. Don't build your life on it. We recently got a new car on lease. First time I've ever owned a new car. Always owned bangers that looked like they were going to fall apart. I don't actually own this car though. If you were to go online and look up the V5C logbook, my name on it. It doesn't belong to me. By the 31st of May, 2025, I'll have given the car back. It's a temporary car. I enjoy it, yes. It's shiny and new, yes. It's quiet. I sometimes don't even realise the engine is running compared to the old, you know, tank that I had before. It's got a whole bunch of features I've never seen before. Some of which I don't think I'll ever use. But if I try and keep that car beyond the 31st of May, 2025, not only would I be an idiot, but I'd be in trouble. I'm going to have some lender somewhere, some company somewhere, hunting me down. Give us that car back. It ain't yours. We store up treasure on earth when we get our satisfaction from the things that are earthbound. Things that start and end on earth. That's Jesus' warning. And it's not an isolated warning. It's not like I'm making something tonight, I think, out of scripture that like comes from one passage. Jesus teaches this principle all over the place. Think about the rich fool. I've got plenty stored up. I'll tear down my barns. I'll build bigger barns. I'll put it all in it and I'll be sorted. What happens? God demands his life that day. He doesn't wake up the next morning. What happens to all his grain? He doesn't get to use it or keep it or benefit from it. What about the rich young man who comes to Jesus, asking what it is he needs to do to inherit eternal life? Jesus says to him, have you kept these commandments? Yeah, I've kept all of them. Okay, go and give away everything you've got and come and follow me. He can't do it. He's a moral, upstanding, wonderful citizen in the community. But he loves his money more than he loves God. You see, and this problem of this worldliness, this treasuring things on earth is subtle. It's not always obvious. It creeps into our lives, but it is a universal problem. All of us have got it. However old or young we might be, however rich or poor we might be, this is a universal problem. None of us have natural immunity to it. So the question is, where is your struggle? Where am I guilty of storing up treasures on earth? I've got to ask that question because I cannot pretend that I haven't done it or I'm not doing it. Is it with money? Because whether we've got a lot of money or a little bit of money, we can be guilty of money being our treasure, because every one of us at some point in our lives has thought, if I just had a little bit more. Whether we're talking a couple of pounds more or a couple of million more, it doesn't matter. We're putting our value in, well, if I just had a bit more money, life would be great. That's why people play the lottery, isn't it? It's why people go to the bingo. It's why scratch cards are at every till point in every shop you go to. It's why other people overwork. If I just put all of these extra hours in and earn this extra money, now life will be easier later. Is it the opinions of other people? Does it make or break our day, depending on what somebody else thinks of us? Are we second guessing what somebody might say or how they'll react? Are we allowing possible negative reactions that we've thought about in our heads stop us from doing what we know is right? It's something I can be guilty of, I know fine well. It's something any minister can be susceptible to. I want to please as many of the people as much of the time as I possibly can. It's a fool's errand, it's not possible. It's just not possible. I'd love to be able to, but I can't. Is it what we look like? Are we trying to meet the standard that the world says is ideal? That's presented in models and celebrities and adverts and TV shows and magazines? Are we desperately trying to halt the inevitable aging process? We're all aging, let's face the fact. All of our bodies are changing. Some of us are losing hair. Some of us are putting weight on. Some of us are, you know, whatever else it might be. We're all getting older. There's a lot of our time and money and energy going into trying to slow that down. There's more of our time and energy going to that than trying to cultivate spiritual maturity, which is a far greater beauty, because ultimately that spiritual maturity is a reflection of the beautiful one, the Lord Jesus. See, if our satisfaction is in any of these things or many others, we are going to be disappointed. More importantly than that, we're going to be disobeying Jesus. Don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth. So what do we do instead? What is the antidote? What is the vaccine to the subtle danger of storing up treasures on earth? What stops us being crippled by this disease? Jesus says, store up for yourselves treasure in heaven. So now you go, well, what is treasure in heaven and how do I store it up then, Jesus? It is about using what we've been blessed with for God's glory. It is about doing things for the benefit of others. It is about having a selfless attitude. It's about being focused on the things that are above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. What Jesus is calling us to live for is to live for what's last. Invest in what is eternal, Jesus says. Listen to how Paul describes it as he speaks, particularly to rich Christians in Ephesus when he writes to Timothy, but this is relevant to all of us. 1 Timothy 16:17 to 19, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. See, Paul fleshes it out there, doesn't he? Store up treasure in heaven. That's the kind of thing he's talking about. You get Jesus' words at the end of Matthew 25 when he talks about the sheep and the goats, and he comes to them and says, they said, well, Jesus, when did we see you hungry and thirsty and naked and whatever else it might be? And he says, when you did these things for the least, the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you ill or in prison and go and visit you? The king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. Jesus is saying that is part also of what it means to store up for yourself treasure in heaven. Martin Lloyd-Jones said something a bit like this. He says, when we put this into practice, when we put this storing up for ourselves treasures in heaven rather than treasured on earth, we will have the right view of life. And he goes on to say in his commentary, we must never lose sight of the fact that in this life we are pilgrims. In other words, we are passing through. We are here temporarily. And he says, we are walking through this world under the eye of God, in the direction of God, towards everlasting hope. So you've got to remember, in our life, we are living under the eye of God, and we are heading towards God and towards everlasting hope. And when we do that, when we think about it that way, we'll start to think, okay, then with what I've got, with what God has blessed me with, whether that's health, wealth, happiness, whatever it might be, how can I use it to give glory to Him? He's the one I've got to give an account to as my Father and as my judge. And therefore, what matters really is about pleasing Him, about being obedient to Him, about doing good works that He has prepared for me in advance to do. Have you noticed that as you pray for people, you become more interested in them? Have you noticed that as you give money to something, your heart towards it grows? Have you noticed that as you invest time in something or someone, the depth of relationship develops that otherwise would never have been there? You see, where we put our time, where we put our money, where we put our prayers as God's people, we find that we invest in that and those things grow in us. A love for those things grows in us. And this is before Jesus even gives us the real reason, the deepest reason why we shouldn't store treasure on earth but store treasure in heaven. Which comes in verse 21. Why does it matter so much, Jesus? Because where your treasure is, he says, there your heart will be also. See, the heart is the focus again. Again, Jesus is saying, look, it's not just what's on the surface that matters, it's what's underneath. And what's on the surface exposes what's underneath. So Jesus is saying, look, if you store up earthly treasure, your heart will be bound to the earth. If you store up heavenly treasure, your heart will be there in heaven. And so he asks us, doesn't he, effectively, where is your heart this evening, he says. Where are our hearts? Are they tied to our money? Are they tied to our possessions? Are our hearts tied to our family, to our reputation? To our identity as it's presented to the world, to our physical appearance, or is our heart in heaven with Jesus? Is he our treasure? Is his glory what we're living for? Is it obedience to him that we strive for with every fibre of our being? Does living a life worthy of the gospel, a life fitting of a child of the Father in heaven, matter to us more than anything else the world might offer? Because the world will offer a lot, and it will look shiny and it will look attractive. Sometimes it'll look harmless. Will we forsake all of that? Will we push it all to one side for Jesus? Jesus is calling us to invest in eternity, to live for something more than this world has got to offer, to live for something which he says is risk-free, something that's permanent. Why? Because in heaven, there are no moth and vermin to destroy, and there are no thieves who can break in and steal. When Peter talks about the hope that we have in eternal life, he says that it can never perish, it can never spoil, it'll never fade. Nobody's going to nick it. They can't. God's keeping it. Jim Elliot now famously said these words: he is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. Maybe we need to invest the treasure of our time, which many of us treasure, in our church family. Maybe we need to invest the treasure of our time in praying for spiritual growth amongst our brothers and sisters. Maybe we need to invest our time in gathering more consistently and regularly with our brothers and sisters in Christ. It might be that a meeting clashes with our favourite soap. It might be that it infringes on our precious me time that the world seems to love so much at the minute. But wouldn't it be of more lasting value to invest it in what God says will last forever? Maybe we need to invest our treasure, our money in missions. Maybe we need to pray for salvation. Maybe we need to go and serve. Maybe we need to give financially. What is it that God is calling us to invest in for eternity today? What is it? Verse 22 and 23 then give a picture. We've got the eye and the body and the light and darkness. The eye, we're told, is the light of the body, like a window into a house. And Jesus talks about a healthy eye. It could be more literally a generous eye or a single eye. The idea of that healthy eye is a generous heart with a single focus. I think that's what Jesus is getting at. And an unhealthy one is the opposite, a stingy one that's been pulled all over in different directions. The point is that this is a picture of our whole being, of who we are, what our focus is, where our heart is at, what we're living for. And so that's why it's tied to what comes before, because it's about, I think that picture is about being generous with what we've got. And yet it also leads nicely into the verses that come afterwards, because it's also about being wholeheartedly focused on God. Which takes us to verse 24. No one can serve two masters, Jesus says. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Note this, what Jesus absolutely, clearly, unequivocally says. No one anywhere on earth, past, present or future, can serve two masters. There is no asterisk with a footnote. No one can serve two masters. Yes, you can have two jobs. You can have two employers. But this picture is not simply about employment. When he talks about masters, he's talking about being a slave to somebody or something. Well, you can only be a slave to one person, Jesus says. You might be able to listen to and obey your boss at work at the same time as listening to your parents, at the same time as obeying God, but you cannot serve two masters. You cannot have two ultimate authorities. There can only be one. You cannot have two people or two things that you fully submit to. But equally, you might not be able to have two masters, but you've got to have one. Nobody can have no master. Everybody serves somebody. For those of you who've heard Bob Dylan's song, he says you've got to serve somebody. It may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're going to have to serve somebody. And he's not wrong. You've got a choice. Or if you prefer Martin Luther, for a theologian's expression, he basically says we are like a donkey who's ridden either by Satan or by God. Brutal. Brutal but correct. You got one master. Who's it going to be? See, this is now about what very clear about control, what controls us. And Jesus is clear and uncompromising, isn't he? These verses should ring in our ears. We should find it hard to shake this off. We should be sat there thinking, no one can serve two masters. Either I'll hate one and love the other, or I'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. Man, that is like, that is black and white in the extreme, isn't it? We cannot serve two masters. We are absolute fools if we think we can. And if we try thinking, you know what? I am the exception to the rule. I can serve two masters. Let me show you. What we will find is exactly what Jesus says in the middle. We will love one and hate the other. Or we'll be devoted to one and despise the other. Why? Because God demands our all. We summed it at the end of When I Survey. Love so amazing, so divine, demands my soul, my life, my all. Not my part, not my 99%, my all. Jesus is saying that here, isn't he? God rightly demands our all, our time, our money, our energy. Everything we have is his. But you see, worldly things subtly do the same. They also demand our all, except they've got no right to. Financial security demands our all. If that's what we live for, why? Because it causes us to stop giving. Because we go, well, I've reached a threshold. I've got this money. I'm financially secure. Well, that means I can't really give any money anywhere else. Because that, you know, that bubble has got to stay fixed. I want to pop it. Financial security causes us to work extra hours, to skip reading our Bible, to skip meeting with God's people because the money matters more. Our kids' education, we could be living for that. What potentially does that do for us? If our kids' education is the be-all and end-all, then we think, okay, well, I need to move to somewhere where there's a better school. Forget the fact that the place I live now is an area of gospel need. My kids' education matters more. So I'll live in that catchment area. Forget the other place. Our happiness, it causes us to disregard the needs of others. We live for our own happiness, we are going to be miserable people to know. What about our comfort? If comfort becomes my master, I will avoid confrontation. I will ignore God's calling to actually get alongside the poor and the needy because it's too much like hard work. It's too much cost. I'm not going to do it. If reputation is my master, it will cause me to hold back from mixing with anybody that society says is an outcast. Because if I'm seen with the outcasts, my reputation plummets. When any one of those things, again, or any other things that might have come to your mind that God might have laid on your heart, when any one of those things grips our hearts, it sucks our time, it sucks our money, it sucks our energy, it sucks our emotions, it sucks our mental capacity. See, anything that isn't God is a cruel master that will ultimately not satisfy. See, it is not for nothing that the first and greatest commandment is this. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. That's why that is the first and greatest commandment, because that has to be front and center. Because you can only serve one master. It's why Jesus warns his disciples, isn't it? Anyone who loves their father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Anyone who loves their son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever does not take up their cross and follow me is not worthy of me. There has to be, according to Jesus, an undivided loyalty to the Lord for every Christian. Not just for the keen Christians, not just for the employed Christians, but for everybody who claims the name of Jesus, there needs to be an undivided loyalty. It needs to be, if there's a choice between Jesus and anything else, that the choice we make is Jesus. That's what he's saying. It's not, well, on most days it'll be Jesus, but on some days it'll be this. He's saying, no, as a Christian, you are called to choose Jesus every time, to obey Jesus every time. That's what he's calling us to do. Now, I know we don't do that. So I'm not saying this so you'll all go away feeling guilty. Well, I haven't done that, Matt. And I'll feel terrible. There is forgiveness for that. There is grace in Jesus because he knows that we don't do that. But what he's saying is we can't go into life thinking it's okay to do that. It's okay to pick Jesus sometimes and pick money other times and pick my time the other times and pick my kids the other times and pick my wife the other time. It's not okay to go into life thinking I can have these various masters who I slot into place for a little while and then swap out every so often. He's saying, no, your master's got to be God. That's what you've got to be aiming for, planning for. And so the question in our lives is this: if someone did a stock take or a critical analysis of our life, what would they find? What would they find that we spend our time on or our money on? I would say they're probably the two biggest things that show where our heart is at. Follow the money, follow the time, follow them both together. Or if you want to put it in a modern sense, let's have this. There's documentaries all over Netflix, isn't there? I mean, there's one just come out about Paul Pogba. How he dares have a thing about him, I have no idea. He's going to be one of the laziest prima donna footballers ever. People have spent all sorts of money on him and he's done nothing. He's never... Anyway, forget that. I'm not even a Man United fan, but hey, you know, does my head in. The guy gets paid to play football. I'd play football for free and expend all my energy to play football for free. Do you know what I mean? If you allowed somebody unhindered access then to make a documentary of your life for Netflix, and the title slide, you can tell I'm not into, you know, I'm not good at, you know, design. So the title slide was a big heart in the middle with a throne. And on that throne was written in bold the name of whatever or whoever sits there. And that will be the title of the show for your life. That's what they're deciding. Give us unhindered access to your life. Let us follow you everywhere. Let us video you everywhere. Let us ask questions of the people you know and get honest answers from them. And we'll make this show. It'll be a documentary. It'll be on Netflix. There's the title slide. What's the title going to be? What's the title going to be? Who or what is sat there as the title of your show, your life? See, it is in every single one of our best interests that God sits there. It is every single one of our best interests that God sits there on the throne of our hearts as friend first, because ultimately he will sit there as judge at the end of time. And so the question is, do we know him as that? Do we know him as father and friend rather than enemy? You might be sat here thinking, man, this is all new to me. This Christian life sounds mental. I haven't trusted in Jesus yet. I don't really know him. Sounds a bit crazy to try and follow him. The cost is big. Jesus never hides that. When he calls people to follow him, he doesn't say, oh, it'll be easy. He says, no, it'll be really hard. It'll be really hard, but it'll be worth it. Do you know Jesus as the friend of sinners? The one who can forgive you for all of your sins, even the ones you're blissfully unaware of? You can come to know him. If you come to know him this evening, you can come to him by asking him for forgiveness and he will forgive you. If you'll turn from sin and live for anything, live for him rather than anything else, then you'll be saved. You will know him. You will know that forgiveness. You will know that grace for every time you fail. He will save you and he'll keep you and he'll never let you down, unlike anything else that you might want to place your life on. Because moth and vermin cannot destroy him. Thieves cannot break in and steal him or what he gives. And if you know him already, which I guess is the vast majority of us, if we know him already, but we know fine well, having thought about this, that we've allowed love for the things of the world to infect our hearts and get a grip on our lives, we need to remember tonight that we can run to Jesus. We can run to Jesus, and when we run to him, we'll be welcomed not with a frown or the wag of the finger, but with compassion. Because Jesus knows it's best for us to come back to him, to get rid of love of the world and to love him wholeheartedly. And that's what he wants for us. He wants what is best for us. And so his arms are open to receive us. Jesus is longing this evening to capture our hearts again with his beauty, with his love, with his grace, with his hope, with his mercy, with his security. Because Jesus knows fine well that all of what he offers is bigger and better and stronger than any of the world's versions, however flashy they might look and whatever form they might come in. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. You cannot serve two masters. So who will we serve? Who will we live for? Where will we store up our treasure?